From our Chicago area studios, this is Behind the Destruction, your Demolition Derby podcast. And now for your hosts, Chris Neumer and Steve Gursky Jr. Welcome to Behind the Destruction.
Welcome to Behind the Destruction, brought to you by Driven Restorations, Randolph, Wisconsin's premier auto restoration shop. I'm your host, Chris Neumer. With me today, a slightly more strawberry blonde, slightly more buxom co-host, Megan Decker. How you doing, Megan?
Good. How are you?
Doing well. Steve Gursky Jr., however, is not doing that well. He has pneumonia right now and sounds somewhere between death warmed over and a male Marianne Faithful. So we appreciate you coming in, Megan, to talk about all sorts of things racing related. And you actually have a pretty good background in racing as well. No problems here in this regard.
Yeah, I really didn't have an option in that factor.
No. Well, with your family background, you come from basically you are the Mannings of racing off-road dirt track stuff, right?
Well, Mannings, yeah, I guess. We'd all be pretty decent.
Mm-hmm.
I'll go with Peyton. Ryan can be Eli.
Yes, and then you have the one brother who doesn't do anything.
Well, I have my oldest, Derek. We've all raced at Sycamore. Derek just got into the figure eights at Joliet this year. And then Ryan does the team demo, obviously, and then my littlest brother. It's not his cup of tea.
He's the black sheep, right? He's going to win the Nobel Prize, and everyone in the family is going to look down on him.
I could definitely see him pulling off some Nobel Prize type of stuff.
Yep. So we are in good hands here today, especially with all things related across the board. And I'm excited, and not just because I came up with a great new TV show this week that I wanted to pitch that's called Love Burglar, but I'm not getting into that right now. But
Love Burglar.
Yeah. Let me ask you this, because this is something I've been noticing. Like, I've been out and about. I've been in New York recently and some other points east, and I've been noticing a style, a fashion style, that stretch pants are finally coming back in style.
For whom?
For women.
Nice.
Certainly not. Oh, thank God they're not coming back in style for men.
That'd be kind of hot. But you guys walking around in stretch pants.
Actually, I'm thinking about the Demolition Derby crowd, and I don't think that's a look that I'd want to see.
I don't think I'd go anymore.
I know.
I think I'd stay home and take up knitting. A bunch of guys walking around in stretch pants.
That would be – the only thing worse would be like the capri stretch pants. But so I've been – like this style was popular when I was in high school. Stretch pants, and all the girls would freak out if you could see any part of their butt in the stretch pants. It was like always.
You're
just
talking like the leggings.
Yes, you know they're like.
Yes,
yeah.
I have noticed.
And now that they're coming back in style, it's almost like people are tucking their shirts into the top of them, walking around with their ass in these like compression leggings, and I just find it fascinating. And I'm also a little bit more than a little bit disappointed that this was not happening when I was in high school.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of leggings. I have friends that wear them, but the majority of them will wear like a skirt over it. So mm-hmm. It would be a skirt and then the leggings, which I think is fine. But just leggings with a shirt, especially tucked in, I don't really want to walk down the street and see that.
Yeah, baby tee. Well, no, see, that's the difference. That's exactly what I'm saying is, number one, it's like it's always that I always found it an interesting I don't know if you'd call it a fashion trend, but like when Victoria's Secret started writing things on the butt of their shorts and stuff like that.
Oh, see, I think that's cute.
See, my thing is, okay, now I want to read. So now I'm already looking at your ass. And then if you see me.
You were probably already looking at her ass, and now it's just giving you a reason to do it.
You know, you get caught once, fourth night, and all of a sudden, look what happens. But
I'm
that's
sorry,
my
ma'am.
Thing.
I was not looking at your butt. I was just reading what was across it.
Exactly. And you know how weird and repulsive that sounds? Then it's like, oh, wait, I don't have a nice butt to look at? Oh. Anyway.
Well, it's better than just staring at it and getting caught and having nothing to say.
Or, oh, God, I thought of a new idea that would be horrible and funny at the same time. Imagine it was Braille and you. Well.
Yeah, it sounds like a couple of sexual harassment cases. I think we'll stay away from that.
I think we, how can we possibly go wrong? But, you know, you is one of the, you know, there aren't a lot of female drivers involved in circle track or demolition derby. There are certainly a handful, but it's not like I would hesitate to call even a large minority. But you are certainly one of them. And it's like, this is a area that I find very interesting. And we were talking about this earlier, which was I was explaining how I could never date Norah Jones, the singer, because I think her music sucks. And it was like if I was dating her, it would be the type of thing where I would constantly be focused on the fact that, wow, yes, I know you have a Grammy, but your music sucks. And I could not do it. And I was asking you about whether you could date a driver, you know, whether it's a demo driver, circle track driver, whatever, who sucked. And so I pose it to you. Could you date a bad driver?
Bad driver. I don't think I could specifically state, no, I can't date you because you're a bad driver. But maybe I would use my girly charm to kind of get him to move away from the driving aspect of it.
Aha.
Especially if I go out there and show him up, then it's going to look really bad that, hey, dude, your girlfriend can outdrive you.
Yes, that among other things.
I don't think I would want to do it. I've actually been in that situation where I've gone out in demos or races and beat the boyfriends, and they were a little less than thrilled with me.
that just seems like a bad thing all the way around. But it would just seem like, at least for me, it would just gnaw on me that, you know, you're involved in the same type of thing. You know, you race and you do this, and you're looking at somebody going, how can I have respect for you with you driving like that?
I'll just tell him how wonderful of a mechanic pit crew chief he is and ask him to concentrate on that.
Ooh, you bring up another good point. What if he can't build?
I've also been in that situation as well.
And it's just, hey, honey, have you thought more about that creative writing class we were talking about?
It kind of looks really bad when your girlfriend can tell you what's wrong with the car and you and all your boyfriends over there are struggling to figure out what the issues are.
Yeah. See, I would actually, I mean, you know how horrible of a, you know how little knowledge I have about cars as a whole. I would love that. I think I would feel like I'd won the lottery if I could go out and, you know, I'm there and I'm sitting around and I'm trying to figure out what's wrong with my car. And then you come up and go, your gas cap's off. And I go, oh.
Yeah, that would be an end of a relationship if that was the issue. The gas cap was off.
Well,
you know, my issue with that is with the guys is I'll tell them the problem, but because I'm a girl, they put my knowledge into question.
Mm-hmm.
I had an issue like that last year where I called, was it last year? It was a couple years ago. I called it my popcorn problem. When I would get on the throttle, it would start popping really bad.
Mm-hmm.
And they're like, it's this, it's that. I went through like 8 carburetors and they're cleaning out the fuel system and doing all this. And I'm like, what about the distributor? And they're like, no, the distributor's fine. It was probably like a 4-week process where I'm going out and losing races and getting all flustered because the car, as soon as it warms up, it's popping and losing power. And the distributor that was put in was wrong.
Hmm.
It was not for that car.
That drives me nuts because I can see how guys would be dismissive of your claims. But just in general, it's like, yeah, this is fantastic. There go 4 weeks of my life.
I was pretty pissed. Needless to say, they started listening to my opinions a little bit more after that.
That is weird that you have to actually, like, prove yourself before you can actually, like, be listened to or taken seriously.
Yeah, it sucks.
Yeah. Now, I've heard a lot of women have told me that, you know, watching a man dance is a great indicator of other abilities. Do you find that, like, if you're just watching, like, you could be watching something on TV, or just if you're in the stands and you're watching a race taking place, do you find that there are certain skills or driving styles that are sexier than others, or ones that are significantly worse?
I would say no fear is a good indicator of good things. If you see a guy that's shying away from missed like hits and stuff,
mm-hmm.
I think I'd be more apt to walk away. But somebody who go out for the full throttle hits and no balls, I think that's a pretty good guy.
Oh, you mean balls out?
No balls. I'm saying balls out. No balls. You know, yeah.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that's the way I drive most of the time. I mean, granted, it is on
the
side streets.
With your gas cap that's not on all the way.
Yes, with the well, I drove balls out with my check engine light on because the gas cap wasn't on all right.
Rebel with a cause over here.
Mm-hmm. That's me. They call me a bad boy for a reason.
He's got open headers and he's got an open gas cap.
You see, when you put it like that, it doesn't make me look that good. Yeah. Well, that problem has been solved and now we're there. I don't know if have you been following any of the NASCAR races thus far?
I actually am not a NASCAR fan.
I can agree with you there. I think there's only so much about going around in a circle a lot that
See, I love circle track racing, I just sitting going around for 300 laps.
You didn't let me finish.
My kind of racing is good stuff.
Yeah. They had I believe this is at the Daytona 500. They had an instance where they had a huge explosion when one of the trucks that was drying the track was crashed into and blew up in a ball of flame. I think if you were on the internet for a week in mid-February, it was all that was being talked about.
They actually YouTubed it.
Yep. And one of the drivers actually gained a lot of popularity because he posted on his Twitter account a picture that he had taken of the event from inside his car while on the track.
What?
Yeah, Brad Keselowski. Number one, he had a cell phone, or he brought his iPhone with him or whatever, and he pulled it out when they were under the red flag and took a picture of the situation and posted it on Twitter during the race. And I started thinking about this because, whenever I hear anything about racing, I always apply it to the demos. And I just started thinking about if there could possibly be a worse idea than attempting to tweet during a demo.
Nice. Yeah, I don't carry my phone with me at all.
I can't think of anything that is worse. I can't think of many things that would be a worse idea than attempting to take a picture of something and tweet it while in a demo race. That just seems like a horrible, horrible idea.
Especially when you're going, 200 miles an hour?
I think
NASCAR,
it was...
NASCAR in the demo, there's so much going on.
Yep.
You look up for 2 seconds and you can get sideswiped.
Mm-hmm. But, that is... Now, and the other part that was surprising to me was that he actually carried his phone with him. Like, that to me seems crazy. Like, are you expecting a call? Do you need to text somebody like, hey, my back tires are feeling a little loose?
I had my phone in my car with me once when I was putting it away in the pits, and it fell out of my pocket and fell underneath the seat, and ever since then, I never carry it with me.
Yeah.
Feel the need that I need to talk to anybody at that moment.
How long do the circle track races last?
Ours?
Yeah.
Maybe 3 minutes or so. Yeah. Mine's only like 8 laps.
I feel like you can go 8 laps without talking to somebody on the phone. I mean, maybe you need to send a text around lap 5, but most of the time I feel like, you're good with 3 minutes without actually talking to people.
Yeah, now I need both hands when I'm driving.
Yeah. Do you carry anything with you in the car?
The car I currently have right now, there was a Dragonfly barrette that I found when I was stripping out the interior, so I stuck that in the dash. And then a friend of mine gave me this little green truck. I don't know why. He stuck it in my dash, so that's been in there.
Huh.
And then when I first started racing, I had one of those treasure trolls.
Okay.
The Ross treasure trolls. I had matching ones, so my dad had one in his car and I had one in my car. And his is actually still in the garage. I don't know where mine went.
Yeah, it's left on it's under about 6 inches of mud right now.
Right. But I don't have a rear view mirror, so I really can't. I used to hang stuff from it that my kids at work would make.
Mm-hmm.
But that got ripped off, so I can't hang anything anymore.
That seems like it might be a slight safety issue just to have that. Or do you use that in the circle track?
They did not want me using it, and I actually drive better without it.
Huh.
They were feeling that I was getting nervous when other cars were around me.
Well, that's something, I've noticed this when, I run in certain 5Ks and things like that, and it's like if you see somebody who's looking over his shoulder while running, you know he's tired and thinking about it, and if you're just going and you're going strong, you don't worry about who's behind you.
Right.
Is it the same type of thing?
Well, they were saying that my driving style would change if people were around me, and they wanted me to be more consistent. So if they took the mirror out, then I wouldn't know who was around me. Mine, I just use it if I was in the lead.
Mm-hmm.
That way I could know if I had to go, full throttle for the last lap or if I could just lay off a little bit. It was more just a comfort knowing where everybody else was at behind me. But it's not there anymore, so.
Yeah, that's nice. I'm struck by the thought of also having like working blinkers in the car so that you could see. It's like, well, he got a 15-second penalty because he merged left without his blinker on.
Yeah, ours, we have to take all the lights out of ours. But I know like different tracks for enduros, they have to have their brake lights.
Yeah. There was a team for the team demo a couple of years back, Smash, Bash, and Crash, and they were the worst team. Like, this is the bar by which all bad demolition derby drivers should be measured.
They were out in 2010, weren't they?
They were out. They ran two races and then got kicked out of the league because they were so bad. Like, nice. I want you to imagine that. You're kicked out of a league because you're so bad. And some of the cars that they would race not only would show up onto this mud track with street tires, but they would have their brake lights intact. And you can actually see it in some of the photos that somebody's slamming on the brakes and the brake lights are lighting up. And it's just like, wow, does that look.
Why even waste your time?
Because there's $750 per car that they got for showing up.
Nice.
So, which is part of the reason they got kicked out too. I am fascinated by that team because it was like, it wasn't just that they were bad, because you know there are bad teams, there are bad drivers, but this was like epic bad. This is the bar by which all other badness should be measured.
Yeah, I don't think $750 is worth me being called the worst team to.
You have pride.
Ever enter it. Now you have to walk around with your face down. Smash, Bash, and Crash. I don't know those. Who are those?
Yeah, who are those? No, we don't know them. Phil Matlock, the team owner. What? No, I heard he's broad at the shoulder, narrow at the hip. But I don't know who he is. Yeah, they used to have cars that would push other cars out onto the track so that they could get credit for having all four cars onto the track.
And especially with how big Team Demo was getting, like all the attention and publicity and like the Lucas Show and stuff like that. Why would you want to make yourself look like an ass in front of all those people?
You have raised a question that I absolutely positively cannot answer, but it's there. And I got to tell you, I'm entertained by it. I mean, just think about that. You know, you have four cars that come out onto the track. They line up in single file and the fourth car would have to push the third car out onto the track because the third car wasn't working. And then because the fourth car is pushing the third car, the fourth car craps out.
Nice.
And then like the first or second car wouldn't actually run floor pedals. They'd only have like a hand throttle.
Did they absolutely demolish those cars? Because that's what I would do if I raced against them.
See, that was the problem with a lot of the teams was nobody wanted to damage their car hitting this crappy team where, you know, as soon as you clear like the first quarter of the first lap, four of the cars are out.
Oh, I'd go out there and absolutely decimate all four cars.
Yeah.
No, and then I'd run my five laps.
There was only one team that did that from what I recall, and that was Reckoning. And they just put the hurt on them and crashed everything. And that was in, I believe, the last night of 2009. And for the first night of 2010, Smash, Bash, and Crash had managed to put together, I think, a car or maybe two cars. And I think they put together two cars, neither one of which worked.
Tell them to come back and put them against the girls. That would be a fun matchup.
Now, that is a challenge I would like to see. All right, so
except
Megan,
I would definitely be Crusher. I would not be a runner in that instance.
So Megan, you ran in the Team Demolition Derby's female race for breast cancer last year.
Yeah.
And are you actually calling out Smash, Bash, and Crash to come back to make a one-time out thing to take on a girls' team?
As long as somebody's going to build me cars.
I think that's what it comes down. You know, the funny thing is the team owner of Smash, Bash, and Crash is probably the same thing. I'd do that just as long as somebody builds my cars for me.
You know what, though? If they really don't build theirs and they're running street tires, we'll just take four stock cars, four box Caprices, and go out and wreck them. Why do we have to build them up? If they don't build them up, we'll just go head-to-head.
Yeah. I recall there was one race, I think somebody said they didn't take the gas tank out, and it might have had gas in it. I mean, it's like that kind of level of
that's
idiocy.
That's pretty awesome.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that is a race I'd like to see.
That would be fun.
Because you got to figure, I mean, even if you're willing to put your name and your team name on the line as being the worst ever, that to be challenged in a sort of male-dominated sport like Demolition Derby by a woman's team, it seems like that would have to do something for you, correct?
I've had guys that have challenged me, and I've actually gotten to the point maybe not a team demo because I don't really know the guys and I've never gone out with the guys. But at the other demos I've done, I've gotten the respect where it's not, I just got beat by a girl or I got challenged by a girl. It's Megan. Megan mm-hmm. just beat me. So it's okay that Megan did it.
Yeah. It seems to me like that would be a pretty good way to just work with me on this. It seems like that would be a pretty good way to get a date too. Like, oh, little girly, you're no good. Oh, you want to go? All right. I'll tell you what. I'll bet you dinner sometime that I can beat you. Right there. I've just talked, and I think if I've only been thinking about it for 15 seconds, but I think if you played your cards right, this would be a pretty good strategy to get a first date with just about any female demolition derby driver.
Most of the guys in the demolition derby group would not really fall into my type, so I'd have to.
Did you say grope or group?
Group.
Okay.
So I'd probably have to decline.
Hmm.
Do you want to build me a car? Maybe. But dinner?
Then you get the car. No, I'm sorry. I reconsidered.
Right. Here, I'll take the car and go crash it. I'll let you know after we're done. Go out, crash it, load it up. Bye. See you later. I'm not interested.
Wow. I take that back. Now I'm not betting you any dinner.
No, I'm not shallow like that. I wouldn't do that.
Oh, sure. You just rolled off the tongue so very nicely.
I'm the nice girl. I'm mm-hmm. not shallow or shady.
No.
I do like cars being built for me, though.
Well, that's understandable and explainable. I mean, I like having things done for me so that I don't have to do it. So long as it doesn't require that workmen paint one of my cats. But other than that, I like it when people do things for me. We'll take a quick break and be back after this. This episode of the podcast is sponsored by Driven Restorations LLC. Driven Restorations is located in Randolph, Wisconsin. Breathe new life into your classic car with superior craftsmanship and personalized service. Free estimates and weekly project updates put you on the road to drive your dream. Visit DrivenRestorations.com, find them on Facebook, or call 608-609-5041. Welcome back. We're here with Demolition Derby driver Jason Rotacco. I've known Jason for a couple of years now, and Jason, last season you had something that was, as far as I'm concerned, one of the most irritating and annoying things to happen that can happen. You had a new motor and no chance to use it.
Yeah, that drove me nuts. I tried to put myself in a position to where I'd be able to use it, but it took a little bit longer to have built than I was planning. And then I got it just a couple days before the race and only one car with an open engine compartment. And that was my 70s car. And, well, we didn't make it to that round. So it basically was a motor. It took 2 years to have built. I finally got it and never got a chance to run it.
Yep. And then 9 months of waiting.
Yeah, but you know what? I worked out all the bugs, I think. That's the only thing that sucks about it. I didn't want to have it sit over the winter. You know, get water in it or anything like that. So I sealed it up real well. I actually kept the car in my garage most of the winter because I didn't want that motor sitting outside. But, you know, it should be good. I tried to start it up the other day and realized now I need a starter. But, yeah, I'm looking forward to running it. Worst case scenario, if we don't do well first night, it'll be the first car I bring out the second night. So I will definitely be ready to use it this year.
Yeah. Megan, have you had anything like that where, you know, you're out there, you're ready to race, you've got some new equipment that you want to try out, and then just due to circumstance, you're just not able to use it?
It's the story of my life.
Hmm.
My masterful mechanics.
Hmm.
I had my new Chevy that my Lexus certified ex-boyfriend built and blew it up. And then I had my motor last year. There was probably a solid month and a half of problem after problem after problem between starters, carburetors, distributors. And then come to find out at the end of the year, we pulled the intake off of it and there was broken lifters, broken push rods. There was a dent in the valve cover from the push rod hitting it. So
you weren't kidding about those mechanics, were you?
No.
No, you know, this is a shame. Steve Gursky really should be here for this because he had a brand new motor built for him. I don't know if you remember this. This was, I think, a year and a half ago. He had a brand new motor. It just ripped, but he couldn't keep it idling. And for probably like 2-3 days before a race, he was freaking out about this motor because it would not idle at all. As soon as he let his foot off the accelerator, it just died. And he was in a mood. He was pissed off. And then as soon as he got the car, it ran great in the race. And he's asking his engine builder about it. And the guy's like, oh, yeah, no, that's the way it's supposed to be. You're not supposed to be able to idle this. And Steve's just like, man, if you could have told me that, you would have saved me like probably $300 worth of equipment that I put into this thing trying to figure out how to make it work. And just well, like, wow.
How are you supposed to not idle a motor? I mean, you can't be full throttle all the time. I mean, I guess you just have to turn the carb up to 2,500 RPM just to idle it, I guess.
Yeah. When you're working on a – or working with a motor that has that high horsepower, that much power in it, it's like that was just the way it came about.
Well, that would really suck because a lot of my cars, I don't run brakes.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you kind of just, you know, bump it into gear to move it. And if it's idling up that high, the car's just going to want to take off. I'm sure
it'd Wouldn't it, like, internally tear it up, though, if you're always – at that high of an RPM?
Not if it's built for it.
That would drive me crazy.
I don't know. I wouldn't like one of my motors set up that way. But, you know, Steve had some pretty good motors, so I don't think I'd complain too much if I had one of them.
Yeah. Well, I think the part that's most irritating is just not knowing it. It's like you're like, oh, it's supposed to be like that. Okay, well, then I can deal with it.
I got a motor like that that just I keep thinking there's something wrong with it because it just won't run. I mean, it runs fine, it revs fine, but as soon as I take my foot off the gas, it dies. And I just keep forgetting that it really just needs to be hot. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a dry block motor. It's got a lot of races on it. It runs really well, but it needs to get hot before it runs. And because pulling out onto the track, getting ready to go out onto the track with it, I freak out because it just keeps dying going up to the line. I'm like, oh, crap, something's wrong. But, you know, it just needs to run for a few minutes, and then it just won't die after that.
Actually, that's kind of when you see cars pulling out onto the line, you know, in any type of demolition derby, particularly the team demolition derby, you can get a pretty good feel for how the team is going to do or how the cars are running based upon whether they stay running. And it seems like what you're describing is actually sort of almost like a fake out. It's like your car won't start. It's like people are like, oh, we don't need to worry about Rotaco. It's like kids. He can't even keep his engine running. And it's like, then you get out there, and you can just tear shit up. And it's like, where was that? I didn't expect that to happen.
People are like that anyways, even if I got a really good running car. Oh, you don't have to worry about Rotaco. So
yeah,
it don't bother me either way. Like I said, it hits a lot of these motors, are these big block 460s that without radiators, because I don't know why people run them without radiators, honestly. But a lot of these motors are built to be like that, and they just won't run cold. Mm-hmm. I mean, they need, you know, the heat needs to swell them up, so, you know, all the rings,
seals.
Yeah, the rings start to seal and everything like that, and it's just the way they are. I got one of those, and even still, after 2 years of running this motor, I know the motor, I know that's how it is, but I still get all paranoid. You know, I actually, now I got smart, and if it's, it's my second round car, as soon as the first round's over, I go and I'll start it up, and I'll let it get hot, and I'll shut it down. And then by the time we're ready to go for the second race, hopefully it's still got enough heat in it to stay running. But, and usually it does. Like I said, once it gets on the track, it's fine. But it always makes them paranoid when they hiccup or they die as you're pulling them out.
Yeah. I'm wondering how much deception can play a part in helping you on the track in racing. And Megan, chime in on this because I'm curious to hear your thoughts.
I actually have something to chime in on that.
Okay.
First time I ran a compact demo, it was after a 50-lap endurance. And
same car?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it had front end damage because I have a problem with parking in the back of cars. And one of the guys that was out doing the demos, he admitted this to me that he looks and goes, oh, well, she's already got front end damage. I'm not going to worry about her. So he goes out, and he's, you know, wrecking havoc on this side of the track, and I'm doing my thing on this side of the track. And next thing he turns around, it's down to me and him. And I got him pushed back into a muddy corner, and I just kept hitting him with the back end of the car. And I ended up winning, and he goes, dude, I sat and looked at you like this girl's out. She's already got front end damage. And you can never judge, I don't think, how somebody's going to do just based on how their car sounds or how it looks.
What if you pull onto the track backwards for a race? And I'm citing this specific example because, Jason, you had this happen where you lost, was it forward gears?
Yeah, that really aggravated me. I tested the car. You know, car ran great. You know, it wasn't my motor. It wasn't my trans. It was one of Greg Message's motors and trans that we kind of traded cars for a race because he took one of my cars and wrecked it because one of his cars failed. So he took one of my cars out. And, you know, it had a few problems. We actually fixed the problems. I went out and tested the car. Car ran great, drove great. Pull it up to the staging line. And, you know, next thing I know, the motor's revving and the car's not moving forward. You know, all my teammates are already out on the track. So I just popped it in reverse and went out there. And, you know, the only thing I could think of is don't get pushed into the wall. 4 seconds into the race, I'm pushed into the wall backwards. I mean, I hate when that kind of stuff happens, but that's the worst when it happens right before you pull out on the track.
And then you have to back out onto the track.
It's the first time it's ever happened. Hopefully it won't happen again.
I wonder if somebody backed out onto the track, whether that would because if somebody backs out onto the track.
It's happened.
Where it's like.
Oh, yeah. I think it was Rob McKay, one of the old Junkyard Dog guys.
Mm-hmm.
He used to pull out on the track backwards all the time. Number four spot.
On purpose?
Oh, yeah. He just pull out on the track backwards. And then when your green flag drops, you know. Start driving around the track, going the wrong way, take the first lap runner that came around.
Hmm.
I honestly don't know why more people don't do that because it sounds like a sound idea. I was going to actually do it last year, but I never really got the opportunity to.
The things that I like about when the transmissions go are the awkward situations that people somehow find them in. And for some reason, I want to say I think this was your team when you were racing for Seek and Destroy in the team demos was that somebody who had only forward gears bumped into somebody who only had backwards gears and they couldn't actually move.
Yeah, that situation actually sounds quite familiar, so it's quite possible that happened on that
one's
team.
Entertaining to me, but, and there was another one. And
it's nowhere near as entertaining to me, trust me.
No, but as a fan, I'm sort of like, okay, that's kind of funny. There was a time I believe this was when Rich Wilson was racing for Havoc, where he did not have reverse, and he crashed into like the first tire he found, and then was just stuck.
Yeah, I remember that. It's like, how do you know what you got to do when your car's malfunctioning? It's in your head. It's, okay, don't drive forward into anything and get stuck, or don't drive backwards into anything and get stuck. And it's so much in your head to where it's like that's like the first thing you do. I don't understand it. Like I said, it happened to me when I didn't have forward gears. I got backed into a wall. Like, I didn't even get past the start-finish line. I got backed into a wall. And that happened with Rich. I mean, it's a rare situation. And it's like, you know what you got to do. But, you know, sometimes maybe you think about it too much.
That, you know, because it's like, I have obviously never driven in a demo or any type of race, but it's just like, you know, if you're on this, you don't think about this if you're just driving on the street. It's like, well, if somebody takes out one of my rear tires that I have to actually compensate like this, it's not actually something that's going through your head. Megan, do you have this at all where it's like, you know, you're on the track and it's like, you're like, okay, this has happened. Now I have to adapt to a different style of driving to compensate for that?
Not really. I don't think just because mine's circle. Well, and in the demos, it's like we don't have the big blocks like you guys have. I mean, we have the markers at Sycamore, but if you get jammed up, I mean, pretty much only a tire, but more than enough times somebody will come and knock you off of them. So you guys have it harder because they have those big blocks that if you get stuck, you're stuck. We just have pretty much boundary markers, which are the tires.
So, okay, Jason, let me ask you this. So you're out there, you're running with the team demos. You only have reverse. You have no forward gears. Do you find that's more dangerous? Is that, like, significantly harder to do when running like that?
Well, yeah. I think it's harder to drive in reverse than it is forward. I mean, like I said, that hasn't happened to me a lot. It's only really happened to me at one time. I've had to use reverse plenty, but it is harder to drive in reverse, especially with me because I use the neck roll and the harnesses. I can't turn my head to look over my shoulder. So if I'm driving backwards, I kind of just have to look out the driver's side window or the passenger side window and, you know, kind of guesstimate where I am because I can't really see what's behind me.
Yeah.
And if I want to see what's behind me, I unharness. As basically what I do, I take the shoulder straps off or I'll toss my neck roll on the ground so I can see over my head. And it is a pain in the butt. And plus, like a lot of these tires we're using, these paddle tires and stuff, they're directional. So you got to drive backwards. The car doesn't move as well.
No.
And if you're running laps backwards, now your driver's door is exposed to the infield. So, I mean, I guess that's really the only way it would be more dangerous is you're leaving your driver's door exposed.
Yeah.
But other than that, it's just pain in the butt. Bryce, one of my teammates now.
Bryce Martin. Yeah.
Before he started racing, he was helping me out a lot. And he pretty much built one of my cars for me. So
he could probably get a date with Megan then if he wanted.
Well, he built one of my cars for me. And this is when I was racing on Damage Inc. And that season was just a lost cause. So I just let him take one of my cars out there. You know, he helped me out. So go ahead and go race it. And it was against that Smash, Bash, and Crash you were talking about. And, I mean, they went out there and won easily. But the green flag drops 30 seconds into the race, popped one of my brand new Swampers. I never even got a chance to race them. They were brand new.
Wow.
And he popped one of them. And I was so mad. But, I mean, it wasn't his fault. That's just racing.
Yeah.
But I was so pissed because it's like, this is $150 I didn't even get to use. And it was shredded.
That does sound irritating. Now, one thing I wanted to talk to you about, you last year you raced on a team called Bad Company. You know, I was on board with the bandwagon. But there are some rumors going around this off season that maybe there's a name change, something like that.
Yeah, I wasn't going to say nothing, but it was already made public. From the world of wheels, it was already on there. But we're going to go back to Junkyard Dogs. Mm-hmm. I think that should make a lot of people happy, probably make a few people not too happy as well.
Yeah.
But,
well, the Junkyard Dogs, just for those who aren't in the know, is probably, would you say it's, what, top two premier like team names in the Team Demolition Derby world? Like, I'm thinking Junkyard Dogs, maybe Locomotives.
Maybe over the last, maybe if you want to say over the last 10 years or something, maybe. I mean, I don't know. When I still think of, team demos, I still think of Orange Crush. I still think of Mean Green Machine. And that's because those were teams that are around, for the Santa Fe days.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Junkyard Dogs may have been around for some of the Santa Fe days too. But actually, honestly, I don't really remember them. I remember, Locomotives, Orange Crush, Mean Green, Sting. Those are the names mm-hmm. that, I remember.
But this is still a really big thing, too, because it was, let's see, the Dogs, they won the championship in 2009, and then they went away. They just changed the name to Bad Company, that was it, and now they're back.
Well, Mark Ziesmer, our sponsor, A Affordable, mm-hmm. it was his team, and all those drivers left. And
that was after the 2009 season.
Yeah, and he kind of just gave up the team. Someone else took it over. Mark was still helping him out. And, it wasn't Junkyard Dogs no more. I mean, it just wasn't. So they changed the name to Bad Company. And then, took kind of, a year or two to kind of recover, get some guys together.
Get some more Rotaco on the team.
Get some equipment together. And, when you have a good team like Junkyard Dogs, you don't want to come back the next year and be like, okay, you go 14-1, and you don't want to come back the next year and go 1-5, win one race. I mean, that's bad for the name. It's embarrassing. So they changed the name, and they didn't want to bring it back till they had something they felt would be a good quality team. And I think this year we should have that. A lot of people don't realize how hard it is to build these cars. Anyone can go out there and race. That the racing's the easy part. That's the fun part.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, you could take half the people in the stands and they could just get in a car and race. Probably some of them better than the guys we have out there now.
I've sat and watched my brothers in the garage and I never imagined the amount of work that went into these cars.
It's a full-time job. It's a second full-time job. I mean, the way I see it, you build a car, a guesstimate, this is just a rough estimate, say 40 hours. I mean, that's from getting the car fresh, pulling, stripping it down, building all the welding.
And if you're a decker, there's a few more welds that you have to put on the car than just normal, yeah.
Well, child is never going to live that down.
Say 40 hours to build a car. I'm saying it can take some people longer, some people shorter. But one of our races is 4 or 5 minutes.
Yeah, if you're lucky.
Yeah, that's – I mean, you can go out there and be 30 seconds and be done.
Yeah.
But
well, I think the fastest race last year was around 2 minutes and 20-some seconds, something
yeah.
like that.
Yeah, and think about all the man hours that went into building those cars.
Yeah.
I mean, so – It's ridiculous.
Do any of the teams reuse any of the cars, or is it pretty much one and done?
No, it depends. I mean, I've went out there and I've reused cars before. It just depends. If you're a crusher, I've come to realize, typically as a crusher, I don't get to reuse a whole lot of cars.
Right.
You better not be able to.
I mean, there's been situations where I've went out there, done a dink hit, and got stuck for the entire race, and maybe I'll be able to reuse that car again. But as a lap runner, if your crushes do your job or you're racing a weaker team, you know, there's been several occasions where I've been able to reuse a car.
Megan, have you found in the racing that you've done that there are similar things where, you know, just certain courtesies that you afford other drivers that people in the stands might look at and go, why didn't she hit this car or why didn't she, you know, spin him out into that, into the wall?
I think I'm more courteous if I'm out in the spectators, which is a guy's division.
Mm-hmm.
Not in the girls at all. There's a lot of vicious dramafiedness that comes along with our Powder Puff division.
Hmm.
Where they, I mean, we'll be running side by side. I'll be on the outside, you know, coming into a turn. And somebody will turn right into me when they need to be turning left. Just to try and push me up towards the wall so that I'm not passing them. So it's pretty vicious out with the girls.
Part of me hears this and is like, really? The girls are more vicious?
The girls are horrible.
And then part of me also goes, huh, oh, yeah, they're more, yeah, I can see that.
Well, and with the guys, you have 60, 70 different drivers out in 8 different races throughout the night. The girls, it's the same, you know, group of 8 girls in every race that we race.
Well, that goes back to kind of, you know, you do it to me, I do it to you. You know what I mean?
I won't dirty somebody until it's been done to me first.
Exactly. So there is certain people I would do that to, but like I said, just I kind of try to race in a way where I expect people to treat me or give me the same respect as I give them.
Mm-hmm. Good you luck know, with that, by the way.
I know it don't work like that. Maybe that's a little bit idealistic, especially with some of the guys we have out there. But I don't know. I just – there's enough danger. There's enough, you know, fighting. There's enough drama in the sport as it is. I just don't feel the need to go and make more. I mean, I completely understand the whole payback aspect of it. Trust me, I do. But I'm not going to – take myself out of position to win a race just to get payback.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, the point is to win.
I won't do that.
But I'm saying it sounds like that's what they did to you.
They do. They do it.
And at that point, what's the point? You're out there to win. If you're pissed off at someone because they cost you a race, then you're going to go out there and not win races just to get back at them? That just sounds dumb.
That I concur. Man, when you put it like that, that is like taking you out of your game to go after one. But it's like, it seems, Megan, like you could also use that to your advantage that you know you have this trio of women who are gunning simply for you. Well, of course, you would need a teammate to help you out there, wouldn't you?
See, and I don't race like that. I go out there on my own.
Yeah.
And I'm sure she goes out there to win races.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's what everybody's like, why don't you go put her in the wall? Why don't you destroy her car? I'm like, I'm spending money. I'm putting money into this car. I'm investing, you know, pretty much my whole summer because we race every Friday and Saturday night. I'm like, I'm going out there to win. I'm going out there for the points.
No, I agree with what Megan's saying. She should attack this girl and try to rip her clothes off in the parking lot.
Rip her clothes.
Yeah. That was where you were going, right?
Megan doesn't fight like that.
Wait until
Megan fought her, she would be.
Wait till one of these really rainy July races.
Yes.
Where
yes.
You know where the parking lot's filled with knee deep water and we'll set up
this,
a little ring.
I've got this makeup artist who does really good smoky eyes. It'll be perfect. All right. Well, Jason, thank you so much for stopping by today. We appreciate you coming in, talking to us about what's coming up as well as what was going on, and wish you the best of luck this year.
All right. Thanks, guys. Pleasure to be here.
For Chris Neumer and Steve Gersky Jr., go Gersky or go home. I'm John Sensimer. We hope you enjoyed our podcast, and thank you for listening. For past episodes of Behind the Destruction and the latest Demolition Derby columns and interviews, please visit BehindTheDestruction.com. You can follow us on our Facebook page or follow Chris Neumer on Twitter @CNeumer. CNEUMER.